أنفسنا ومن سيئات أعمالنا، من يهده الله فلا مضل له ومن يضلل فلا هادي له، وأشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له، وأشهد أن محمدا عبده ورسوله. أما بعد، to continue with the Usul al-Fiqh lesson, the book Risal al-Latifa Jami'ah of Shaykh Abdul Rahman ibn Nasr al-Sa'di rahimahullah. And last time, just quickly mention how this week we stopped halfway through the text of the section here, what's numbered here as chapter 4. We had the previous time and that and the last time that the evidences in fiqh are 4, meaning with the majority of scholars, the evidences, I would say the majority of course, meaning the Maliki Madhab, the Shafi'i Madhab, Hanbali Madhab and the Hanafis, then the evidences with them are 4, that they agree upon 4, the book and the sunnah, and consensus and analogy, meaning that they accept all of those 4. Some of them of course add other things after that, such as the practice of the people of Medina, such as istihsan or so on, other things on, but the 4, they agree upon those 4. As for outside those 4, then with regard to analogy, then the zahir is they disagree with regard to analogy, qiyas being an evidence, which and they disagree about quite a lot of what comes today. However, what we had was that the out of the 4 evidences and the majority accept, the book, the sunnah, the consensus and analogy, then the very basis for all of these 4 are the first 2, the book and the sunnah. And the third and fourth rest upon and rely upon and depend upon the first 2, the book and the sunnah. So last time we had that the texts of the book and the sunnah, deriving evidence from the text of the book and the sunnah, and we had, without going over it all again, that it can be from a nas of the book or the sunnah, which is a clear textual statement, a very clear textual statement, anas, which can only have one meaning. So therefore very strong evidence. Secondly, we had that the evidence can be that from that which is zahir from the text of the book of the sunnah. That which is zahir, it has to have, it means it's a textual wording, it can have at least 2 meanings. But one of them has to be the predominant meaning. That which we normally understood and will nearly always be the case. So that is the zahir. And today this section continues on what occurs here on page 66. So evidence is taken from that, sometimes on us, sometimes that which is zahir from the 2 of them. And then he continues, وَتَارَةً تُؤْخَذُ مِنَ الْمَنْطُوقِ وَهُوَ مَا دَلَّ عَلَى الْحُكُمِ فِي مَحَلِّ النُّطْقِ وَتَارَةً تُؤْخَذُ مِنَ الْمَفْهُومِ وَهُوَ مَا دَلَّ عَلَى الْحُكْمِ بِمَفْهُومِ مُوَافَقَةٍ إِنْ كَانَ مُسَاوِيًا لِلْمَنْطُوقِ أَوْ أَوْلَى مِنْهُ. He said, and sometimes it can be taken. I mean, the evidence, the proof in the matter, sometimes it can be taken from the mantuq, from what is textually stated. And it, the mantuq, it is that which indicates the ruling by means of what is directly stated. And sometimes, he moves on, sometimes it is taken from what is understood, al-mafhum. And it is that which indicates the ruling because of what is understood through conformity. In what we're dealing with, it conforms to what occurs in the text. Muwafaqa. If it is equal to what is stated in the text, then that's muwafaqa. Or if it is even more deserving of being the case, wa'awla minhu. So with regard to these phrases here, and that's, you can, the diagram you can see on the board there, it shows the wordings of text indicate rulings in one of 2 ways. What is textually stated, and all this diagram occurs on page 71, or page 72. That's what's on the board here. The ways in which texts indicate rulings in one of 2 ways. So what we have so far in this section that we just mentioned here, what is textually stated, the mantuq. And the second one he mentioned, or what is understood, al-mafhum. If what is understood, either it will be in conformity, or and then it will have even, it will be either be equal to what's been in the text, what we're dealing with, equal to what's in the text, or it has even more right to be the case than what's in the text. So, the explanation of that, he said, sometimes it can be taken from what is textually stated, al-mantuq, and it is that which indicates the ruling by means of what is directly stated. In the footnote he said, his saying ma dalla, that which indicates, meaning the wording, means the wording that indicates it, means that the wording. It indicates, his saying, this indicates the ruling, fi mahalli nutq, literally in the place of being spoken. He said, he's saying fi mahalli nutq, that which is textually stated, he said, meaning in its being stated, it's an evidence in its being stated. He gives an example of that. So the first one here, the mantuq, he gives an evidence for the mantuq, that which is textually stated, that's an evidence by textual statement. He said, an evidence, an example for it is his saying, he the Most High, فَلَا تَقُلْ لَهُمَا أُفْ Surah Al-Isra, the 17th Surah, Ayah 23. The Ayah with the explanation, and the Ayah being in the context of the command to the children with regard to their parents. فَلَا تَقُلْ لَهُمَا أُفْ The explanation, so do not say to them, to either of them, أُفْ A word of disapproval, a word of annoyance. Don't say to them, don't say to either of your parents, أُفْ Word, they mention it as being the word, the slightest word of disapproval. You can mention "uff." Somebody says anything, "uff." The very slightest word of disapproval. You're not, the ayah forbids that to the parents. He said, so the wording which is spoken al mantuq yuhrim makes it forbidden, makes it haram to say "uff" to the parents. So the textual wording, the mantuq, makes it forbidden to say uff to your parents. That's the mantuq. Then he moves on, he said, so sometimes evidence is taken from that, what's textually directly stated. He said, and sometimes it is taken min al-mafhum, from the mafhum, from that which is understood. And he gives an example of that, or he breaks it down first. He said, and it, the mafhum, is what indicates the ruling, not by a direct statement, not by the wording itself, the direct wording, not by the wording itself, unless understood from it rather. He said, and it is of two types. The mafhum, what's understood, is of two types. Firstly, mafhum al-muwafaqah, understanding of that something conforms with the text. And what we're dealing with, we have an understanding based upon the text, we understand that this thing, it conforms to the text. The second one is mafhum al-mukhalafa, understanding that something is contrary. And understanding that what we're dealing with is contrary to what occurs in the text. And he said, so he mentioned now what is mafhum, what is understood, and it's of two types, that which is conformity to a text, that which is contrary to a text. And he moves on, he said, and it, mafhum, that which is understood, is what indicates the ruling because of what is understood. By muwafaqah, by conformity, by agreement. In a footnote he said, mafhum al-muwafaqah, understanding of that which conforms, that which agrees. He defines it, he said, it is the meaning that is acquired from the wording by its being silent about it and its agreeing with the stated ruling. And what that phrase means there, the language is a bit, it's translating not too well, that the issue we're dealing with is a matter dealt with in text. We have a matter now that's not directly stated in the text. Not directly stated in the wording of the text. But it's understood. When we look at it, we understand that it's the same thing that is mentioned in the text. By understanding, we can see it's the same as what's been mentioned in the text. So that's mafhum al-muwafaqa. Understood to be in conformity. إن كان مساويا للمنطوق. If it is something equal to what's textually stated. You see that the thing we're dealing with is text equal, it's the same as what's been mentioned in the text. In the footnote he said, and this is called conformity, and it's equal to the thing in text, مساوي. He said that is called لحن الخطاب. It's just a title, and each book of Asul al-Fiqh, you sometimes see a lot of these things, they have different titles, the Mantuq and the Mafhum. They give them different titles, they call the Mantuq Ibarat al-Naf, they call the Mafhum Isharat al-Naf, and so on and so forth. So, as long as you understand what's been dealt with. So they said here, that which is understood by conformity to be equal to the text, that there is also known as lahn al-khitab, literally something like the indication of the address. What's indicated by the text, not directly stated, but it's indicated by the text. So he gives an example of that. That's something that's conformed to the text, and it was seen to be the same as the text, just the same. He said, an example of it is his saying, He the Most High, إن الذين يأكلون أموال اليتامى ظلما إنما يأكلون في بطونهم نارا وسيصلون سعيرا. سورة النساء, the fourth surah, ayah 10. With the explanation, those who devour, those who literally eat the wealth of orphans wrongfully, they are only devouring, they are only eating into their bellies fire. And they will burn in a blazing fire. Then he gives an explanation here from Al-Wajiz fi Usul al-Fiqh of Abdul Karim Zaydan. That he said, with regard to this ayah. So it already had an ayah, the first ayah, that was mentioned in the examples. فَلَا تَقُلْ لَهُمَا أُفْ. So do not say to either of your parents, أُفْ. That's a clear textual statement, direct statement, that it's forbidden to do what is mentioned in the ayah by text, to say أُفْ. Now this example here is what's understood by conformity as being something equal to what's mentioned in text. So first he mentions, he said, this is from this book, Al-Wajiz fi Usul al-Fiqh. This noble ayah gives by its wording and what it states, by its manpuq, by its ibarah, a prohibition of akl, prohibition of devouring, eating, the wealth of orphans wrongfully. So, by the mantuq of the ayah, what's forbidden by direct text, is eating, taking their wealth and devouring it. That's the mantuq. He said, and there is to be understood from it by what is indicated by the text, the prohibition of burning it, burning the wealth of orphans, or squandering it, or destroying it with any of the types of destruction. Because these matters are equal to eating their wealth wrongfully by the common factor of transgression against the wealth of the orphan who is incapable and unable to repel harm from himself. Now he summarizes the point. So the text, the Nas, makes it forbidden by its wording and what it states, its mantuq, to eat, to devour the wealth of orphans wrongfully. And it makes forbidden burning that and destroying it through what it indicates by mafhum al-muwafaqah, what we're dealing with here, understanding that to conform to the text. And what it is silent about in this place is equal to the stated ruling, because of the reason for the ruling. In the text, by direct statement, what's directly actually stated and direct and clear in the ayah is a statement of eating, the forbiddance of eating the wealth of orphans. What's not mentioned directly in there is what about burning their wealth? What about throwing it away and squandering it and so on and so forth? It's not directly stated, but it's understood to be forbidden. Why? Because the reason is the same. It's, you're harming the wealth of the orphans wrongfully, doing exactly the same thing. Now, is this thing the same as what's mentioned in the ayah, or is it even more deserved? No, here it's the same. If you take the wealth of the orphan, whether you eat it, whether you burn it, whether you throw it away, waste it, it's all the same thing. So this is understood by al-muwafaqah. So that is how the ayah is approved by maqam al-muwafaqah for the forbiddance of burning the wealth of orphans and squandering it and so on and so forth. Then he said, "Aw awla minhu," or by its being even more deserving of the case than it. It's something not directly mentioned in the text, but understood from it. And the thing that we're dealing with, it's not mentioned directly in the wording, but we can see it's the same thing. In fact, we can see that it's even more deserving of the ruling than what's actually stated in the ayah. The example stated in the ayah, this thing has even more right. In the footnote he mentions, this is called fahwal khitab, literally the meaning or signification of the address. It's just a term. The first, if what we're dealing with is the same as what's mentioned in the text, it's called lahm al-khitab. It's just a phrase that you have to learn what it means. Lahm al-khitab. If it's something that has even more right, it's called fahwal khitab. Then he gives the example, the more important part. He gives the example. He said, its example is his saying he the Most High. And he goes back to the first ayah we had. فَلَا تَقُلْ لَهُمَا أُفْ. Same ayat, Surah Isra, 17th Surah, ayah 23. His address again to the children. So do not say to them, either of them, your parents, uff. Don't say uff, even a slight word of disapproval. Don't say it. Then he gives a quote from the same book. Oh, geez, we are sort of fit for Abdul Karim Zaidan. He said, the text, this ayah, by its wording, and what it states is manthuq, shows the forbiddance of a child saying uff to the parents. Forbiddance, haram. Because of what this word contains from annoyance to the parents. So it is immediately understood that the text includes the forbiddance of striking the parents, or verbally abusing them. Because of the fact that striking or verbally abusing contains even more annoyance, and causes even more severe pain than the word of, I say the word of. So therefore, hitting or abusing has even more right to the prohibition than saying of. So therefore, that which is stated is silent about, I mean, the ayah mentions not saying uff. It doesn't mention hitting or that. He said, so that which is stated silent about has even more right to the ruling than what is mentioned, what is stated. And this meaning is clear. It does not require ijtihad, deduction, or ta'ammul, careful reflection. So that's dealt with the mantuq. It's dealt with conformity that something is equal to what's mentioned in text, or conformity of that something has even more right to be the case than the example mentioned in text. Then he gives a quote from Shaykh al-Islam Ibn Taymiyyah. He said, point of benefit, Shaykh al-Islam Ibn Taymiyyah said in Majmu' Fatawa, volume 21, page 207. And likewise, so he's discussing two things, Shaykh al-Islam Ibn Taymiyyah. He's discussing what we're talking about here. Mafhum al-muwafaqah, for that which has even more right to be the case, and he's discussing analogy, qiyas, because there's some similarity between the two. So he said, and likewise, analogy of that, qiyas, analogy of that which has even more right to be the case. Even if the textual address does not indicate it. However, it is known that it has more right to the ruling than what is stated in text. And the same is the case there. That's just as much a proof as well. Analogy of something, and something, analogy of something, because it has even more right to be the case. Then that's just as acceptable as what we're talking about here. Mafhum al-muwafaqa of more right. He said, so criticism of this is one of the innovations of the Zahiriyya. One of the innovations of the Zahiri, which nobody preceded them upon from the Salaf. Because the Salaf, the early predecessors, they continued using as proof the like of this and this also. I mean, analogy of that which has even more right, and also conformity of something, conformity to the text, and having even more right to be the case than what's mentioned in text. Then moving on with the main text, he continues, أو بمفهوم المخالفة إذا خالف المنطوق في حكمه لكون المنطوق وصف بوصف أو شرط فيه شرط إذا تخلف ذلك الوصف أو الشرط تخلف الحكم. He said, again, he's still talking about that which is understood. He said, or by way of understanding of that which is contrary. We're understanding something, or we're understanding matter, not mentioned directly in the text, but it's understood. But we're understanding what we're dealing with here is contrary to what is mentioned in the text, contrary to what's mentioned in the text. Or by way of understanding of that which is contrary. مفهوم المخالفة. If it is contrary to what is stated in its ruling. Because of the fact that what is stated in text is given a characteristic or a condition, such that if that characteristic or condition is absent, then the ruling is absent. Meaning we're understanding something in the text, the ruling is there, a ruling is given to something, but it's attached to a certain attribute. I mean, if this attribute is found, then the ruling is this. Or this characteristic is that, then the ruling is this. And now we are seeing that our case here is something different. A different one. I mean, what we have, that characteristic or that condition is not present in what we're dealing with. And the textual ruling is dependent upon that condition or that attribute. What we're dealing with doesn't have it. So therefore, we judge it to be the opposite case. Mafhum al-mukhalafa. He said, explaining in the footnote here, which is quite a long one, he said, أو بمفهوم المخالفة, or by way of understanding of that which is contrary. And it, مفهوم المخالفة, which is this one here right on the extreme left side, understood, but understood by what is contrary. He said, and it is the meaning that is taken from the text regarding what it is silent about. The text is silent about this thing. When it is something contrary to the meaning stated in the text. And it is called dalil al-khitab, literally the proof of the address. It's just a term for it. Dalil al-khitab, if you see that, what they're talking about is mafhum al-mukhalafa. Dalil al-khitab. It is called that also. Because the address proves or indicates it. And it is of many types. From them, then he mentions just two of them, and that's just the two that come in the diagram, that which is connected to a condition, and that which is connected to a characteristic, and there are others as well, at least four others, if not more. And from them is mafhum al-ghaya, what's understood, what's connected to a limit, mafhum al-adad, what's connected to a number, mafhum al-laqab, what's specified to a type or a kind. That's three other ones that I don't mention here, just to mention. So he said, it, maful ma mukhalafa. It is of many types. From them are, and he mentions two, A, maful sifa, that which is understood through a characteristic which it has. And it is a wording which is restricted by a characteristic, indicating the opposite of its ruling when that characteristic is absent. This is from the book Abu Ajiz. A wording which is restricted by a characteristic, indicating the opposite of its ruling when the characteristic is absent. Meaning, if the characteristic is present, the ruling is such and such. Which gives us the point that if that characteristic is not present, then the ruling becomes opposite. We understand that. He gives an example of that. He said, its example is, his saying, he the Most High, إِن جَاءَكُمْ فَاسِقٌ بِنَبَئٍ فَتَبَيَّنُوا, Surah Al-Hujurat, the 49th Surah, Ayah 6. With the explanation, if a wicked person comes to you with some news, if a wicked person comes to you with a report, then verify it. Then verify it. He then brings a quote in the footnote from the book Taysir al-Usul of Hafiz al-Zahidi. And the quote is, with regard to this ayah, in ja'akum fasiqun bi naba'in fatabayyanu, if a wicked person comes to you with a report, then verify it. He said, what is mantuq, what is textually stated in the ayah, is not accepting the report of a wicked person, fasiq, except after verifying the correctness of the report. As for Dalil al-Khitab, what we're dealing with here, Dalil al-Khitab meaning mafhum al-mukhalafa. Meaning what is understood from the characteristic via understanding of the opposite. Is that if a person who is not a fasiq, not an evildoer, comes to you with a report, then it is obligatory to accept his report without verification. And other than the person who is other than an evil person, a wicked person, is the adil, the upright, the honest, upright person. This means taken from the book At-Taksis fi Usul al-Fiqh. I mean, the ayah doesn't mention about if a righteous person comes to you, it doesn't mention that. The ayah mentions an evil person. If an evil person comes with a report, you've got to verify it. So the understanding of the opposite, that our case, what we're doing here, what about if a righteous person comes? Anybody who's not evil then, so that ruling is attached to the person being evil, that's a characteristic. So it's understood by the opposite, if that characteristic is absent, the person comes who is not, doesn't have the characteristic, not evil, then the ruling is opposite as well. We have to verify if he's evil. If he's not evil, we don't have to verify. This mafhum al-mukhalafa. The second case he mentioned, second type of mafhum al-mukhalafa, understanding that which is contrary, opposite, or contrary rather, mafhum al-shart, that which is understood because of a condition. It is the text whose ruling has been attached or made dependent upon one of the means which are used to bring about a shart, a condition, indicating negation of the ruling when the condition is absent. And that's from the book Taysir al-Usul of Hafiz al-Zahidi. That was the quote there. The first one, the one quote before was not from him. It's from the Taksis, the Usul al-Fiqh. So this was from Hafiz al-Zahidi. Meaning a ruling is connected to a condition. So we understand if that condition is not present, then the ruling is opposite. He said, meaning, it's being attached to a condition which necessitates the presence of the ruling when the condition is present, and absence of the ruling when the condition is absent, from the book Al-Wajiz. Then he gives an example of that. He said, his example is, he's saying, he the Most High, وَإِن كُنَّ أُولَاتِ حَمْلٍ فَأَنْفِقُوا عَلَيْهِنَّ, Surah Talaq, the 65th surah, ayah 6. And the ayah being in the context of women who you have divorced, wives who you have divorced. With the explanation, and if they, the divorced women, are pregnant, then spend upon them. Give them nafaqah, give them spending, continue to give them spending. Then he brings a quote from At-Taksis, fi usul al-fiqh, that he said about this ayah. What is textually stated in the ayah, the mantuq, is the obligation of spending upon the pregnant wife who has been divorced. Obviously, I mean, still with him. So she's been divorced, she must be spent upon, until she gives birth. So that's the mantuq, what's stated in the text. And mafhum al-mukhalafa, understanding of the opposite, what we're dealing with here, is that if she is not pregnant, the wife you divorced, she is not pregnant, that it is not obligatory to spend upon her. Then the footnote continues, and here there is a point of benefit, that these two, meaning mafhum al-sifa and mafhum al-sharat, that which is understood through a characteristic, or that which is understood through a condition, they are a proof with the great majority of the scholars. As we just mentioned earlier, outside what's the text here, the Zahiris, which is Ibn Hazm, they disagree about this, but the great majority, these two are a proof. He said, Ibn Qudama said, in Rawdat al-Nadir, his famous book of Usul al-Fiqh, of Ibn Qudama, volume 2, page 779, he said, those proficient speakers from the people of the language, they understand from the fact that a ruling is attached to a condition or is attached to a characteristic, that ruling is absent when it is absent. And that's what people, correct speakers of Arabic, understand. When a ruling is connected to a condition or a characteristic, when that characteristic or condition are not present, the ruling is not present either. As is proven by, and then he gives an evidence, what is related by Ya'la ibn Umayyah, that he said, I said to Umar ibn al-Khattab radiallahu anhu, did not Allah the Most High say, Laysa alaykum junahun an taqsuru min as-salati in khiftum an yaftinakum alladhina kafaru? Surah An-Nisa, the 4th surah, ayah 101. He said, Ya'la ibn Umayyah said to Umar, did not Allah the Most High say, Ta'ala with the explanation, there will be no sin upon you if you shorten the prayer, if you fear that those who disbelieve may attack you during the prayer. He said, so now the people are in a state of security. If the people are on a journey, now he's talking about the traveller's prayer. I came down with regard to the situation about a fear of disbelievers attacking in the prayer. So he said, I said to Umar, are not the people now in a state of security? What he's saying is the traveller's prayer continues. We still, when we're on a journey, we still shorten the prayer. And we're in a state of security. But the ayah mentions, if you fear. So he said, are the people now not in a state of security? So he said, Umar said to him, I was surprised at what you were surprised with. So therefore I asked Allah's Messenger, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, and he said, صَدَقَةٌ تَصَدَّقَ اللَّهُ بِهَا عَلَيْكُمْ فَاقْبَلُوا صَدَقَتَهُ. Reported by Muslim, as hadith 686. He said, Allah's Messenger, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, said, it is a charity which Allah has given to you. So accept the charity that He has given to you. Then he comments here in the footnote, so they both understood, Ya'la ibn Umayyah, and likewise Umar, both of them understood from the permission of shortening being attached to the state of fear. They understood the obligation of completing the prayer in a state of security. And they were surprised at that. And this, then he carries on with, and he starts a quote here, that this is what is understood by Dalil al-Khitab, which is called Mafhum al-Mukhalifa, understanding that which is contrary. Meaning, in other words, as he'll show, what both of them understood, Ya'la ibn Umayyah, clearly Umar radiallahu anhu, they understood the ayah made it a permission that when you're in a state of fear from the disbelievers, you can shorten the prayer. You're on a journey, you fear from the kafirs, that you can shorten your prayer in that case. So they both immediately understood that when you're not in that state, when you're not in a state of fear, you're on a journey, but you're not in that state of fear that's made a condition here, that the ruling changes, then it becomes opposite, it becomes obligatory to complete the prayer. But they asked Allah's Messenger, Umar radiallahu anhu asked Allah's Messenger, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, and he mentioned that it's a charity which Allah has given you. So he brings a quote now, which is from Al-Adilla wa Shawahid ala Wujub al-Akhth bi Khabr al-Wahid of Sheikh Salim al-Hilali, a book about the obligation of taking reports which are not mutawatir. He said, and this is Dalil al-Khitab, this thing, which is Mafhum al-Mukhalafa, understanding of that which is opposite. This is the same thing. And Umar ibn al-Khattab radiallahu anhu asked the noble messenger sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, and he assented to his understanding. However, he informed him that this is not counted here. I mean, this particular case is not counted, because Allah has given a charity to you, so therefore you should accept his charity. And if the understanding of Umar had been not correct, then the messenger would not have affirmed what he said to begin with, and then directed him in this manner. So it is established, and all praise is for Allah, that Dalil al-Khitab, proof of the address, proof of the text, meaning Mafhum al-Mukhalafa, is a proof which can be relied upon. In the principle that Umar was bringing was right, the principle was correct, the understanding would normally, the principle is okay, fine. But in this case, there's an exception here. Allah has given it a charity, so even when you're not in a state of fear, you can still shorten the prayer. But the principle he was basing what he thought upon was correct. Then the next footnote here, a very short one, he said, that which is stated in text is given the correct characteristic or a condition, such as if the characteristic or condition is absent, then the ruling is absent. He said, he is indicating, may Allah have mercy upon him, by this saying of his, mafhum al-sifa and mafhum al-shart, that which is understood via a characteristic, or that which is understood via a condition, and they are from the types of mafhum al-mukhalafa, that which is understood by as being the opposite, as we have made clear in the previous footnote. Then the text continues here, the last part of the text. والدلالة من الكتاب والسنة ثلاثة أقسام دلالة مطابقة إذا طبقنا اللفظ على جميع المعنى ودلالة تضمن إذا استدللنا باللفظ على بعض معناه ودلالة التزام إذا استدللنا بلفظ الكتاب والسنة ومعناهما على توابع ذلك ومتمماته وشروطه وما لا يتم ذلك المحكوم فيه أو المخبر عنه إلا به. He said, and the indication of the book and the sunnah is of three categories. The indication of accordance, al-mutabaqa, when we apply the wording to the whole of its meaning. And the indication of inclusion, tadhammun, when we use the wording as a proof for a part of its meaning. And the indication of what is a consequence of its meaning, iltizam, when we use a wording of the book or the sunnah and its meaning as a proof for the consequences of it, and for those things which are a completion of it, and for its conditions, and for whatever is such that the matter being judged or informed about cannot be completed except with it. He gives some very short footnotes here. He said, firstly, the indication of the book and the sunnah being of three types, three categories. He said in the footnote, and all of them are from the categories of al-mantuq, the first one here, that which is textually stated. So we're going back to the first case here, that which is directly textually stated. Mantuq. So the mutabaqa, accordance. And the examples, inshallah, will make it fairly clear. Accordance, mutabaqa, and inclusion, tadammun, are from that which is sarih, a wording which is explicit, clear wording, very clear, explicit wording. And iltizam, consequence, is from what is textually stated, but is non-explicit, not explicit. And so the first two, mutabaqa and tadammun, their account is being explicit from the text, what's textually stated. Whereas iltizam, that which is a consequence, is from that which is not explicit, not directly very clear. And it, iltizam, consequence, the third of these, it in turn is divided into, three, the indication of al-iqtida, that which is necessitated, and al-ishara, that which is indicated, and at-tanbih, that which is drawn attention to. And the place for the details of this are the longer books. In a footnote they say, refer to Sharh al-Kawkab al-Munir and Ijabat al-Sa'il Sharh Bughdat al-Amil of Aslan Ali, page 239, and what follows it. Then he says, explaining these three, the text, the indication of mutabaqa, accordance, and the indication of inclusion to dhamm, and indication of al-iltizam, consequence. He gives a footnote on the first of these, that the indication of accordance, mutabaqa, is when we apply the wording to the whole of its meaning. In a footnote he said, such as the indication of al-khaliq, the word al-khaliq, the creator, to refer to the self of Allah, and to the attribute of al-khalq, of creating. And that in Arabic is described as mutabaqa, using the wording to apply to whatever it covers. I mean, the word al-khaliq, Allah's name, it applies to Allah himself, his self. So when we speak of al-khaliq, we're speaking about who? We're speaking about Allah the Most High, we're speaking about his self, mentioned about him. And we're talking about his attribute of khalq, because that is the wording covers all of that. So we're using the wording to apply to its whole meaning. Secondly, the second matter is the indication of tadammun, indication of inclusion, when we use the wording as a proof for a part of its meaning. In a footnote they say, and a part of what carries the name, such as the way in which al-Khaliq, the creator, is a proof for his self on its own, or for the attribute of creation on its own. When we're using the word al-Khaliq, just refer to Allah. Who is the one who did such and such? Al-Khaliq. We're referring to Allah himself, him. Or when we're referring to just, we're talking about his attribute of creation. Then you use the word, if you just need to refer to the attribute of creation, then it's referring to a part of the full meaning. The next and last footnote they mention is with regard to the third dalalatul iltizam, what's indicated by consequence. He said, in the footnote, from that which is outside the thing that carries the name, but which is necessitated by it, such as the indication of al-Khaliq, the word the creator, al-Khaliq, is indicating the two attributes of al-ilm wal-qudra, knowledge and ability. So by saying what's automatically knowledge and ability are outside what's covered by the word Al-Khaliq, the word Al-Khaliq, the creator, then outside knowledge and ability are outside its meaning, outside the meaning of the creator, but they are automatically necessitated by it, because the creator must have knowledge, the creator must have ability to create. So these are things which are by iltizam, they're necessitated by that wording. And that should be, essentially it says ba, footnote ba, but of course there's no footnote ba, it's footnote alif. The proof for that is, and it said, look, I'll refer to the book, Al-Qawa'id al-Mufla, fi sifati Allahi wa asma'ihi al-husna, page 11, of Sheikh Muhammad ibn Salih al-Uthaymeen, and Al-Qawa'id al-Tayyibat fi al-asma'i wa sifat. He finishes here by saying, and here, O my brother reader, is an explanatory diagram, which summarizes what has preceded. With regard to the ways of deriving proof for the legislated rulings. And then they give a diagram at the end there, which is slightly, more or less what's on the board here, with more details. And just, I'm going to read it and then what afterwards. But one of the most difficult things is what is meant. He doesn't explain what is meant here by what is textually stated in Mantuq, that which is a text which is non-explicit, not directly very clear, that which necessitates the iltizam of it, is of three types: iqtida, ishara, or at-tanbih wal-ima, that which is necessitated by it, that which is indicated by it, or that which is drawn attention to. You'll find the explanation of that in the book by Ash-Shanqiti, Mufakkira, Surah al-Fiqh al-Shanqiti. I'll mention that after.
Why not that?
It's slightly tricky. Yeah, alright.
Don't do that.
Please. obviously he doesn't, he quotes these three here, and he doesn't really say what they are at all here, he just leaves the words there. So there could be a big question mark in people's minds, to add the other smaller question marks there. What are these three here? The necessary consequence, you understand, but what does it mean, necessitated, indicated, drawn attention to, alluded to, or what's going on there then? So the place where I could quickly find that clarified it to some extent is the work in the Mudhakkira Usul al-Fiqh, the work of the original book of Ibn Qudama. This is because the Mudhakkira, the original work of Ibn Qudama, this is Sheikh al-Shanqiti, Muhammad al-Amin al-Shanqiti's explanation of that book. It makes the book easier to understand. So he explains these three things here. That which is textually stated, but it's not an explicit text, rather it's a consequence of the text, in one of three senses. The examples he mentions. Firstly, with regard to dalalatul iqtida, that which is necessitated. As I said, these translations are very rough. It's difficult to translate, especially difficult for me to translate. These sort of words have some approximate meaning in Sharia. So first, the iqtida, that which is necessitated. He says, and I will just paraphrase what he says and abridge it as it goes here, that dalalatul iqtida, that which is necessitated, the evidence of that which is necessitated, it can never occur, can never be the case, except when there is something absent. There's a text, and there's something there that's not stated. And we have to understand it in a certain way. We have to understand it to be the case for the speech to be yastaqim, yeah? The speech to... without it, you'll see it looks like there's a gap in the speech. There has to be something understood. Or that if it's not understood, then somebody say, well, that speech is not correct. We can see that is not the case, but rather, unless that which is understood. He gives an example. The example makes it clear, inshallah. He said, firstly, رُفِعَ عَنْ أُمَّتِي الْخَطَأْ وَالنِّسِيَانِ, the saying of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, that mistakes and forgetfulness have been raised from my nation. He said, we have to understand in that saying, in that hadith, it means that something you probably directly jumped to your mind straight away, but saying we have to understand something here that is not mentioned in the wording, but it has to be understood to be in the meaning. That raised from my nation are mistakes and forgetfulness. Meaning, being taken to account. This word here, al-mu'akhadha, is not mentioned in the text. It doesn't say al-mu'akhadha, being taken to account. It's not mentioned here. It just says, raised, literally, raised from my nation are mistakes and forgetfulness. He said, we have to understand that there's something unstated here, which is al-mu'akhadha, meaning being called to account, being brought to account because of mistakes. That is what is meant. Because the fact is that mistakes have not actually literally been taken away from this ummah. I mean, mistakes do occur in the ummah. We don't understand the meaning to be mistakes been taken. My ummah never makes mistakes. That cannot be the meaning. So we have to understand something. Being taken to account for mistakes has been raised. He gives a second example. He said, likewise in the saying of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, to Dhul Yadain, the man with the two long arms. Or that's the man with two arms. Obviously the hadith in the prayer when the Prophet ﷺ prayed two rak'ahs, hadith in two sahihs, that the Prophet ﷺ prayed in the masjid, prayed two rak'ahs, in the Dhuhr prayer, one of the daytime prayers. Then he went to the back of the masjid after two rak'ahs, and he rested, put his arms, in Arabic, the whole large book by Al-Ala'i, extracting all the rulings from it, extracting all the rulings from that hadith, which are many. The Prophet ﷺ placed his arms upon some wood at the back of the mosque. The people were wondering, so Dhul Yadayn came, he's the one who spoke out and said, O Messenger of Allah, has the prayer been shortened or did you forget? I mean, you've only prayed two, you know, is it the revelation that the prayer has been shortened now or did you forget? So the Prophet ﷺ responded, Kullu dhalika lam yakun, none of that has happened. I mean, the prayer hasn't been shortened and I didn't forget. So he said, what we have to understand here, I have to understand something from the saying of the Prophet, literally, that, you know, one of those two, that's why he himself said, rather one of them has happened, yeah? So we have to understand the saying of the Prophet, none of that has occurred. Obviously, a statement from the Prophet, none of that has occurred. I mean, I didn't forget the prayer and the prayer has not been reduced. What it does is, he did forget. So we have to understand something here, which is not mentioned in the wording, that, fi dhanni. I didn't forget, as far as I know, in my dhan, as far as I surmise, as far as I think, I did not forget. Meaning, otherwise, it would be taken people to understand that to be not true. The Prophet is saying neither of these two happened, it's literally neither of them did happen. So it's something that's understood. A third example he gives is that which is correctness in the legislation would depend upon. He said, such as the saying of Allah the Most High, فَمَنْ كَانَ مِنْكُمْ مَرِيضًا أَوْ عَلَى سَفَرٍ, the ayah we got in Surah Al-Baqarah with regard to fasting in Ramadan, if you are, with the explanation, if you are on a journey, rather if you are ill or upon a journey, فَعِدَّةٌ مِنْ أَيَّامٍ أُخْرَ, then other days. We have to understand here something in the ayah to be, فَمَنْ كَانَ مِنْكُمْ مَرِيضًا أَوْ عَلَى سَفَرٍ, if you are ill or upon a journey, فَأَفْتَرَ, and he breaks his fast. Then he has to fast for the day. We don't understand that if you're ill on the journey, even if you fast on the journey, but still you've got to fast again. No, we have to understand, meaning if you're on the journey, ill or on the journey, and you don't fast the day, you break. So that's something that literally has to be understood by. It's necessitated, it's bizarre. Right. The second case then, whether that makes it clear or not, is the second is Dalalatul Ishara. He said, the clarification of that is, that it is the wordings indicating a meaning which is not directly meant by the wording in origin, but it is essential, it is necessitated by the intent. I mean, it automatically, it necessarily follows on. It's not the actual normal, it's not actual wording, but it has to follow on. Give an example. I mean, something which naturally follows on. He gives an example. He said, such as the indication of أُحِلَّ لَكُمْ لَيْلَةَ الصِّيَامِ رَفَثُ إِلَى نِسَائِكُمْ, the ayah. The ayah again from Surah Al-Baqarah, with regard to the nights in Ramadan, that it is permitted for you to have relations with your wives. said, this leads on to the understanding, automatically leads on to the understanding, that it is correct for a person to fast when he is in a state of junab, when he's had relations with his wife. It's not mentioned in the text, but it's understood. Why? Because the permissibility of having relations with the wives at the last part of the night, where there is no room, therefore, at the very last part of the night, it's permissible. There's no room to take a bath. This necessitates entering the morning, entering the dawn, in a state of janabah. Here's a second example. وَحَمْلُهُ وَفِصَالُهُ ثَلَاثُونَ شَهْرًا. With regard to the child in the belly of his, in the belly of his mother, and then the breastfeeding afterwards, to the weaning. وَحَمْلُهُ وَفِصَالُهُ ثَلَاثُونَ شَهْرًا. With explanation, and its bearing in the womb, and his weaning is altogether 30 months. Along with his saying, the other ayah, وَفِصَالُهُ فِي عَامَيْنِ, and his breastfeeding until the weaning, is 2 years. This leads to the understanding that the shortest amount for pregnancy is 6 months. The shortest possible distance for pregnancy is 6 months. It automatically leads to that, leads on to that, naturally. The third matter, that which is by way of tanbih, well, ima, drawn attention to and alluded to, here's an example for that. It is, I'll just give the example, the explanation is so wordy now. But the explanation he gives is the saying of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam to a Bedouin man who came to him and said, I am destroyed. I've had relations with my wife in the daytime in Ramadan. So the Prophet ﷺ said to him, free a slave. He said, we have to understand, now in this here, we have to automatically understand that what he said, free a slave, is connected to what the man said there. That ruling that he gave, free a slave, is because of what he said. We have to understand that. The Prophet ﷺ didn't say, because you have done this, therefore free, he didn't say that. But from the context, we have to understand that ruling that the Prophet gave is connected to, otherwise there'd be no meaning to his speech. Why? You know, what's the point of the context there then? What's the point that the Prophet just said something randomly? No, he said in the context of that. So that is what's drawn attention to, what's alluded. Not directly stated in the text, all it said in the text was free a slave. What's alluded to, what's drawn attention to is, if that happens there, then this is what you do. والحمد لله وصلى الله على محمد. So at least if the basic idea is there, inshallah. Some of the details might be a bit slightly tricky. Allah.
The distinction between those three at the bottom is a bit blurred.
Yeah.
The example.
If I can. Try and leave write this out literally what he said, or get it from somewhere else, inshallah. Yeah.
I'd say if you'd given me an example, one of those examples, and said which one of these three stops does it fit
into,
I wouldn't be able to put it.
Yeah. Basically, there's something like, I wrote something down here, the first one here. That which is necessitated. Something, this is just my rough little notes here, scribbled onto it. The first one, al-iqtidar, something not mentioned in the text, but necessarily understood to be meant by the text. I mean, it's there in the text, it has to be understood. It's there, it's not what it would be, it's got to be there in meaning, otherwise the text doesn't make sense. The second of them is that which naturally follows on from the text. This has been said, so if that happens there, automatically this is going to be a conclusion, this is going to result automatically from it. You can have relations with your wife until the door. Sometimes then a person is going to be junub. And it doesn't mention about that ruling. What's the ruling of entering the fast or wanting to say the junub? It doesn't mention it at all. It's talking about something else. But that will result in that. It's a natural result of the text. A third one, a circumstance being mentioned along with the ruling, such that we have to conclude that the circumstance is the reason for that rule. Still a bit moving.
Not really, the third one is to do with a link between two things, isn't it?
Yeah.
The second one is to do with a consequence.
Sort of something that naturally sort of follows on. Yeah. The third one is something, a wording we have to understand to be there present in the text.
Yeah.
Understood. Obviously, this will then be used as a basis to derive rulings. That's what we say. Well, where is it in the text? It's not there in the wording, but by iktidar. You know, we understand the ruling is influenced by iktidar. It doesn't have to always be stated. It doesn't have to always be stated there in the text. It can be understood. It can be. It's a natural consequence. Well, how do I know from this ayah here that you can enter, you can fast while you're in the state of janab? Well, it doesn't state in the ayah. That's not even talking about that. But no, by Ishara, it is proven, so on and so forth.
How do you get the mafhum al mukhalafa there without falling into error? Just if something doesn't, for example, this person is my enemy, therefore his enemy is my friend.
Yeah.
But it doesn't work like that, does it? He might be my enemy as well.
Yeah.
Just because,
I say, firstly, the Zahiris disagree about that. They disagree about accepting it at all. Then, it's got, obviously, it's limited to where the scholars have got the foot, the scholars use it. It's not that we're going to start using it now. We learned Prince, we're going to start using this now. We're going to mess up, straight away.
So it's more, so that when they use the term, we understand it.
Yeah. Or a scholar's used it and he gives you his evidence is this, and we say, well, I've never even heard that before. I'm not going to accept that because I've never even heard of the thing before.
Yeah.
But no, there is something here. There's something behind it. There's evidence. It's correct that the Salaf, the reports where the Salaf seem to be using this type of thing. It's a sound basis here. If the legislation mentions a ruling, but connects that ruling to an attribute, then if the attribute is not there, we can't. First of all, we can't apply the same ruling. Definitely. Allah.